are tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey there, Helix fans! Welcome back to the Helix After Show at AfterBuzz TV. I'm out here to ask you a question. Do you know the way to San Jose?
I'm in love with Alan, so I believe I know the way to San Jose. My name is Julia.
Why does Julia sound like Alan now?
Everyone sounds like Alan.
Guys,
it's how I developed the virus.
We're talking about the season finale here on AfterBuzz. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. You can tweet at me throughout the broadcast at ThatZachWilson and forever from here on till the year for the 10,963rd day. But you can also follow this and all of the YouTube, the AfterBuzz shows on YouTube at youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Now let me introduce my fantastic panel before I get too long-winded.
Hey guys, Stephen Lemieux. I'm Stephen Lemieux, and I'm glad to be here. Dude, it's another season, though. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Across the table.
Hey, guys. I'm Liz Rishmawi. You can follow me on Twitter at Lizzie Maui. That's LizzyMawy.
And we are super excited to welcome back Helix showrunner Steven Maietta.
Hello.
Woo. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Good to be here.
How does it feel?
Oh, it feels wonderful. Feels very good. It's just another season under the belt.
Get those Ziz juices flowing and start on writing season three.
Exactly right. Well, knock on wood.
Well, what's going to happen in season three, Steve? Tell us right now.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Now, in season three, I can tell you if we are so fortunate to get a season three, it will be there'll be things you recognize and there'll be things that you don't.
Sergio better come back as a cyborg.
As we've seen in season two, dead is not really dead.
Exactly.
Helix,
but a cyborg would be cool.
Terminator be cool. Genesis tie-in. Got it. Okay.
I like it.
So just to be clear, because I know everybody's going to be asking, there's no word yet.
There's no word yet.
Okay.
Officially, no word. So we know nothing.
Gotcha.
So don't bug us. No, I'm kidding. You can bug us, but we don't know.
Well, because last year you joined us at the same time for the finale, and at that time you guys were between then and then actually, you had just gotten the pickup.
We had just gotten the pickup.
And that was a very exciting time. Yep. So between then and then writing season two, how much change do you think? Like, was it a completely different concept, or?
I mean, we went in right after we got the pickup. I went in with Ron Moore into sci-fi, and we pitched a take on the show and how to kind of reboot and reset the show in some way, and what was going to happen now that Arctic Biosystems was completely blown up, and they liked it, and we, you know, they had notes and thoughts for us, and then we dove back in.
Cool. Yeah.
So what did you want to accomplish with season two? When you're going into a show that you end up with such a cliffhanger, and it's so far in left field, I question whether you knew where it was going or not. So, I want to know, did you have to kind of quickly pull out your notebook and be like, all right, guys, we got a season two. What the hell are we going to do?
I'm really upset you didn't make him sound like Batman, too.
No, I wouldn't do that to Steve.
Thank you, I appreciate that. No, we definitely have had an idea where we were going, as we have an idea where we'll be going if we get a season three. But a lot of it then started to develop and percolate as we were starting to talk about story and break story. Yeah,
like
we were percolating. So yes, we knew. Yes, we came up with a lot of new stuff once we got word. And so we have an idea or two for season three, but it will all just depend on the pickup or not.
So how did you kind of decide who to bring back and who to leave dead, who to bring back and kill, and who to bring back as a ghost Doreen Boyle monster?
Of course. We wanted to bring back everybody as much as possible.
Obviously.
We brought back
everybody's
a lot
awesome.
Of folks. Even the dead ones came back in some capacity. And there were a couple of folks that we were not able to use as much as we wanted to, and that was just a process of breaking story and figuring it out. We wanted to use Miguin Fairbrother, who plays Daniel, and to look a lot more than we were able to do. We just couldn't figure out a way to make that story work. And the same with Biaseros, Mark Ganime's character. we got him in there, but we could not figure out a way to get him in as much as we wanted to use him.
Yeah. So when you're breaking a new season like this, what goes into the decision to create a new character like Dr. Summers, mm-hmm. as opposed to like putting Biaseros, let's say, into that role?
We actually talked about that, and one of the things that we came up with in talking through the potential storyline, and okay, we're transplanting the entire show to this island in off the Pacific Northwest and into this abbey, and trying to figure out how to, especially once we decided that we were going to pull Julia back into the future and do the future stuff with her for the first part of the season, then it was like, where does Biaseros fit into this? And we could not, without really, you know, jumping the island shark, figure out a way to get Biaseros in a way that felt organic. So that's why we ended up putting him with Julia in the present day story and bringing him in that way.
Yeah. I have to ask, I found that this season had a little bit more comedic parts than we got with last season. I mean, there was, you know, frozen monkeys, but that had a
thing. You can't beat Awkward Window.
You really can't.
Yeah, I know. I missed Awkward Window, yeah. Believe me.
But now we had some awkward...
We had Awkward Pulpit, and we had Sergio staring out over Awkward Office.
And we also had Awkward Door, where it's like, smash the glass.
There was a lot of glass smashing.
But I just want to know, like, was it an idea, or just it came up as the episodes were written by each of the, you know, the writers to have those comedic moments? Because I'm still laughing to the fact of, oh gosh, help me! With
Miguel,
Daniel, and Hitake,
Miksa.
Like that was just show, yeah. It was hysterical. But like, I mean, are these things that just came up as they were written,
yes,
or
yes,
just
things
like
that came up as they were?
We
written.
Have 5 minutes, guys. Put this in. It's
no,
hysterical.
No, it was really. We just talked about a thing to do with those two characters, and then as they were going to be traveling and having a conversation, the idea came up. Wouldn't it be funny? This is just like Sheriff Andy and Opie walking down the road, and then we're like, wait a second, if we can get that song, because of course the music is such an important part of the show.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, talking from a devil's advocate standpoint, one of the things that people kind of worry about when they are doing a second season that's in a completely different setting is when you try to bring in those characters from the previous season so hard, do you think that kind of pigeonholes you as a writer into kind of changing the story into a way just to get them in, as opposed to moving the story ahead where you thought it would go in the beginning?
Not necessarily. I think that we love those characters from first season, and we wanted to try to, if we could come up with an organic way to get them in, we would. If we couldn't, we decided, you know what, we're just going to hold back and not use a character as much. I mean, Tuluk was a character that we wanted to get into the show. We just couldn't do it. And so rather than try to force him in some way, we said, let's hold back, but hey, we could have this fun thing with Hitake. If Hitake is truly losing his mind in episodes 3 and 4, let's do a thing where we have Jay back, we have Daniel back, he's wearing that same sweater, what the hell's going on? Mm-hmm. So we could have fun with that.
What was the, because what I'm wondering is, when you have a season one that has so much of a, like, you're building a world, mm-hmm. and especially with a new show like this, you have to build a believable world that brings in characters and takes them out in the same kind of believable way, and not has them just, you know, I don't want to reference another show, but just brings them back out of blue because they're alive again for no reason. Once upon a time. So when you're building this world, was there any kind of a decision process when you were thinking, you know, I really like this character and I want them in season two, but I feel like if we forego them in season two and bring them in three, we can kind of have, they've been living this whole throughout season two doing something else, and we can focus on them in season three. Yeah. So are there any characters that we're expecting to see in season three that have been busy during two, but we didn't see them?
I mean, the one I would say we'd want to bring in for sure is Tuluk. And what has he been up to, and what's been going on with the search for the Inuit children and all that stuff, because we weren't really able to service that subplot on the island. That was one that we talked about trying to get in some way, and we just couldn't do it. It was like, this doesn't make any sense at all, so we're going to pull back on that. That's a mission that's happening off camera for season two. If we get season three, we'll dive back into it.
So why didn't we have Sergio in on that mission, though?
We wanted to have Sergio in, and we also needed to have Julia have someone to bounce off of in the present-day story, literally and figuratively bounce off of.
Ha!
So that's why we pulled Sergio off and into that. And we actually had a little Inanna and Sergio runner that we wrote it. We ended up pulling back on the writing of it for budgetary reasons, and we shot one scene with them that then, once it got into the show, it was right before they left for the island, before Julia and Biaseros head to the island. We watched it in the show and went, this has no place in this show, unfortunately. It was a really nice scene between them, but it was only one scene. And since we couldn't do an entire storyline with them in that episode, it just felt like,
Everybody likes banana, but yeah. Sometimes
everybody likes banana.
Everyone loves banana, yeah. But
sometimes
yeah,
it just doesn't fit on the island.
Right.
So season one. Let me. I'm sorry, Zach. I'm kind of taking over here. So season one. The setup is everything leaves off. You have them all trying to figure out what's going on with Ilaria, and we get Julia at the conference table with her ring finger, missing finger, and she's at the glass, and you're like, "Holy crap, Julia's with Ilaria!"
Right.
From that moment, was the plan always for Ilaria to have been playing Julia the entire time?
No, that's actually something that came to us as we were breaking story, and what we thought going in was that, okay, let's see if Julia is in fact sitting at that conference table at the end of season one and saying, shall we begin? It's like, wow, she's gone such a long way in the past 15 months since the end of season one happened, or 8 months or whatever it ended up being, that by the time we then got to the start of two, it was like, all right, let's see how far she's gone, and has she fully drunk the Ilaria Kool-Aid, which, in fact, she had. So we were trying to come up with the interesting arguments about what does it mean to be a part of Ilaria. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What does it mean to be immortal? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And really have that conversation, because in season one, we didn't have that much of an opportunity to do it. It was more like, holy crap, I'm immortal. Now what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Season two was really about, with those characters anyway, about the debate of, is immortality a good thing? Is it the worst thing in the world that has ever happened? So,
look at Alan's face when it happened.
Yeah. I will say, Neil would like us to say hello to the madman.
Hello, Neil.
Oh, Neil. Shout out to Neil.
Seriously, Neil, you made me hate you in this season, and that's an amazing feat for somebody, because I love you so much. So that's for your acting and commitment to this part, kudos.
Yeah,
if you made me hate you.
If you take Neil and rearrange the letters, you get Eli N.
What?
Eli N. I like Elin. That. I thought of that. See, we knew it all along.
No, somebody actually
if
in the chat is saying,
if you cut in half the N and turn it sideways, it turns into a V, so you can write evil.
Somebody in the chat's actually been like, you do know if you take the H and the X out of Helix, it's Eli. I solved it!
It's all solved.
It's like,
yes,
you found it. You found our evil plan right there. That's awesome.
Well, so some of the season two plotline sort of came as you were breaking the story.
Absolutely.
How do you approach, like, because you didn't know, and you still don't, that if season three is coming.
Right.
How do you write a finale?
It's really hard. I mean, that is one of the things about episodic television is, unless you're a monster hit, you just don't know if you're going to be coming back season after season. And so you can either wrap it up in a nice little bow and hope, or what we do is we just hang it out there and say, okay, cliffhanger, you know, here it is. Look, Sarah in the future, and hope that we are able to then tell those stories and pay it off. Yeah.
Were you worried that was a little bit too similar to season one's cliffhanger?
It is similar. I like it because it gets way out there into a place. I feel it sort of elaborated on the conference room and took it into this place that was like big and sci-fi and like way
out
there.
That was so cool. I love the effects in that scene.
She's like baby crazy Hitachi now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think it was really cool how
crazy a talk.
I also wondered, there was part of me that almost thought or assumed, I mean, it makes sense that they didn't, but part of me was wondering, when I knew it was Jordan when, you know, before she turned around, and part of me was wondering if her eyes would be silver in that scene, if they would just kind of be more open about it, like, these are people, like, if Ilaria became really big and if they were running the world as they were immortals such a big deal or not? You know, so did you guys kind of think or question
we
whether or not when
that.
She turned around
her
eyes would be
it.
Silver or not?
I thought that I kind of had a feeling they wouldn't be silver just because they're still portraying this image that they're it was a doctor's office and we're here to help you.
Ilaria Fresh.
Oh my gosh, that's what they could do for Sergio in the next season. They could, if he's like one of those you know, the thing where the computer does, like, an image or something, and he's like,
hello. A hologram?
Yeah, hologram. Welcome to Ilaria. And they just, you know.
I like it. The
only thing I had a problem with this episode was the Ilaria Fresh logo.
the logo?
Whoever your graphic designer is, I will slap him, because he spent maybe 30 seconds on that freaking thing.
It felt very corporate and kind of vanilla. Don't
you think that's a commentary on corporate
America? Outsource
it to
me.
Yeah, it is. It is, in fact.
Just let me slap him. No.
And by the way, did you recognize the voiceover on the Ilaria Fresh commercial? Anyone?
Should we?
It did sound familiar.
You should recognize. We had a very special voice appearance by Jerry Ryan.
It was Jerry Ryan.
Oh,
Jerry Ryan,
yeah.
Who was kind enough to do that for us. And we
that
thought,
is so awesome. Because
we were going to get someone from the Loop Group to record it, or just, you know.
I thought it was 7 of 9.
There you go.
That raises so many questions.
No, but it makes sense with Jordan's character, because she's in this position where she's got a forever fetus. Mm. We don't know what's kind of happened to the forever fetus at this point. We're assuming that
They have to figure it out some way with all the tech and stuff going on.
You'd think so. I certainly am not sure that by 2029 we would have gigantic car garages with cranes for pregnant women.
But everything else is completely understandable.
The significance,
no flying cars, just giant baby garages.
The significance of the what is the comparison of what Michael was doing to what Ilaria is doing was not lost on me. You have Michael just does it in a basement and takes out all their teeth. Basically, Ilaria is doing it at this state-of-the-art facility, but in reality, really, they're taking these people, locking them up for 9 months, and breeding humans.
Correct.
So it's a very big...
Voluntarily,
and also it's a lot different. He wanted to find, you know, like, make his own immortal army that would follow him, whereas Ilaria is now just picking and choosing which mortal humans they can breed to actually populate the Earth.
No... I mean, you know what the sad thing is? Is it's probably freaking Neil Nate. It's probably Eli's semen that's impregnating every woman on Earth. I mean, to be honest, he walks away with such a smirk. Yeah. He's like, this is all part of my plan. I'm going to give you this thing that's going to make everyone infertile on one condition. I get to be the one that makes every man on Earth a cuckold because I am taking on the legacy of Michael.
I mean, he's definitely getting his stuff out there. But I think Ilaria ultimately, the whole point that at least as I see it, is that Ilaria is using now, they control reproduction 100% now across the world. So they're using it to create the best version of humanity. So they test the women, they figure out who's going to be the best genetic match for this woman. To create super babies.
Season 3.
But at the same time, I believe, you know, the woman who came in and was talking about how she wants to have a baby and everything like that, she's talking about, I have the best life, I have, you know, me and my husband, and, you know, I just really want a baby. I'm wondering if it almost, you guys ever see, what was it, The Giver? There's a book.
Yeah, I didn't read it or watch the movie.
Yeah.
Probably, I think I was supposed to read it in middle school, and I did not.
I actually really liked it. But anyway, it was like everybody had different tasks and stuff and who you assigned. So it's not like the parents would actually be the biological parents of said child. But I wonder if in this case, if they approved of the male as well, that they would let her have a baby
with her husband. I think, I don't think it has anything about her husband. Like, they are picking her based on her viability, and then they are going to give her a specific man's DNA.
Well, that's what I was saying. Which, I didn't know if they would let them choose if they wanted to have a kid with their spouses or not. But in the future, who knows? I mean, you know.
I think Ilaria would definitely say, like, no, we're picking the person.
You picked a loser to marry.
The apple did its trick.
You can't have a baby with him.
So
sterilize the male population.
Shouldn't have eaten that apple.
For the sake of predicting something.
True. Males would be.
For the sake of predicting something, 2029. How far away from 30 years later is that? Is that
That's
from today?
It's about halfway.
So 15 years. Yeah, so 15 I'm years. Assuming if we do pick up for season 3, we're going to be picking up at the 2029 area.
We may. I don't know. We've talked about it. I think that we probably will not do a split time focus again. We won't bop back and forth between future and present like we did this year. It was a lot of fun, but it was kind of onerous. And it was tough to keep those dual timelines going.
The effects were awesome, though, whenever they would flip back and forth to see the decay of the building and stuff.
I thought our effects people did a great job with that. And I don't know. We haven't decided yet. The only thing I do know is that if we do get a season 3, it will be in a different location. There will be all sorts of new stuff going on, but we will truck along all of our immortality and Ilaria backstory with us.
Yeah. I would like to really see personally, I mean, I don't know about the fans or you guys, but, you know, so far in these past 2 seasons, it's always been in a secluded area, and I would really love to see more of, even if it wasn't the whole season, but if they at least had a good chunk of the season where it took place in the middle of where, you know, civilization is.
Things going down.
And we talked about that. Yeah.
That's a good notion. Like, it's time.
Well, let's jump into, because we talked a lot about, like, the potential future of the show. But let's talk about this episode.
I have a question that I'm trumping you on.
But?
All right, real quick, guys. Okay. And then let's actually talk about this episode.
Because it's not about this episode. I wanted to say, whose idea was it for Sergio to die like he did? Because I was just really upset with all the badassity that he's been known for. This crazy-ass Kool-Aid chick is the one who just, like, me.
He dies like a bitch.
That was poor Mark. I felt bad. It was the worst call that you have to make to an actor. But it felt like the right moment. And we had talked about, as we did with Doreen last year, it's like somebody had to die this year. We actually purposefully went for something that was not huge and super badass for him, because it's like, he can't really be dead, can he? That's not possible.
Yeah.
Sure enough, he was.
Do you worry sometimes, though, that TV is slowly becoming that due to things like Game of Thrones. It's like somebody has to die, as opposed to like it making sense. It's just somebody has to die.
Maybe I don't know. I felt like the thing about this show is it's a dangerous show and there's dangerous things going on. So if everybody lives, that
doesn't make sense.
It's you can certainly other shows have done that. A lot of shows have done that, but it just. It keeps the danger alive because you don't know in any episode who's going to bite it.
And does it ever worry you when you're doing a show like this, and you did talk about how it was difficult to do the separate timelines, but when you have, it's like, when you have two timelines, one in the future and one in the present, you're basically writing two sets of canon for your world. And in the future, it's very difficult to do that because you're going to be playing back to that because if you make any decision in season three that happens before that, you're like, oh, that can't work because this is done in the future.
We talked about that a lot and trying to keep the future nebulous enough that we didn't lock ourselves into something in a potential season three that we were going to be like, oh, crap, we can't do that because of what we set up in the future already. That being said, yeah, I mean, we're locked into that as part of our world now and our you know, the future of the show moving forward. We'll have to incorporate all of that for sure.
Okay, Zach.
Yeah. Okay. So let's, before we jump into all of this episode, let's take a quick moment to talk to you guys about iTunes and YouTube and all of the different places that you can go. Guys, it does help us out a ton. When you go onto iTunes, hit us with a review and a rating. It makes a big difference. It helps us out at AfterBuzz TV, but it also, believe it or not, does help the show itself. Helix is trying to get a season three, and social media has become a massive part of that. So go on to iTunes, make sure that you are saying how much you like the show. Go on to YouTube, tell us how much you like the show. Go on to Twitter, use hashtag RenewHelix. People are paying attention. It is amazing how much they are paying attention. I am shocked at it.
And we get reports from the studio network every week talking about the ratings for the show, but also talking about internet buzz and about Twitter and about how many unique hits there are and stuff like that. It's now part of the equation for
make it trendy,
whether
guys.
It's a show.
Especially nowadays where half the people don't, I mean, I can't tell you, it used to be where everybody had cable and now so many people don't have cable, so they find whether it's Hulu or some other form, you know, where it's, you're not going to get the same readings as if everybody's tuning in at the same time, you know, it makes more sense that way to get the fair readings.
Not many people watch live. I do want to give shout outs real quick. Guys, if you are watching live or if you're watching this YouTube video, go ahead and hit that thumbs up button. It really helps us out a lot. And if you're not watching live, leave a comment. We love reading your comments, and a lot of you watch it, you just don't leave comments, and we want to read from you. Shout out to Con Mayo, Kendra Black, Mikey Bag of Donuts, Heather Sivo, a few other people, Destiny Morna, and the chat refreshed. You guys are talking a lot, so you deleted all the old comments.
You guys. But so when we left episode 12, we went to black on who shot who.
Right.
And we found out it was Julia who shot Alan.
Yep.
Shot him in the neck.
Could you shot him anywhere else?
Yeah, like the arm that he was holding the freaking gun in.
No one answered the arm. It's all dead body shots.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't put it past you guys to shoot him in the nuts, but I'm glad you didn't do that.
Couldn't do that to poor Alan.
His voice, imagine. I can't even do it.
Oh, my nuts!
But so that effectively knocks Alan down for a while, except that he doesn't want to stay down. Alan wants to go, I guess, burn Mother to the ground.
Well, it's great because, saying I called it, sorry guys, totally called it last week, Alan knows what's at stake. He knows that Ilaria is not going to release a Narvik Sea. He knows that everything they've been doing to Julia is playing her right into their palm, and that this is the Narvik Sea, is this mycotic infertility apple. So, also, I wasn't lost on me the irony that the apple is the apple of Eden, and then like the two people populate the earth, and now the apple is bringing them back down to a lower pot, not lost on me, plus the cross and all that, so you gotta get the references. But yeah, it's like, he knows of the stakes, so he doesn't care that he's shot, he doesn't care that he's stabbed, beaten up, and all that. He wants to go and
he's on a mission.
Burn it down.
Yeah, I mean,
it
would have been a waste, though. I mean, all this time with him being undercover at the Abbey and stuff like that, I mean, I think I'd be pretty pissed if that was the way, you know, like, after all that I've been through, all that I've been doing for the past God knows how long since all this started, you know, like, and he is that type of person, you know, so.
Yeah,
I would have been disappointed if he didn't.
Well, it had to come down to Alan versus Peter at a certain point, or her mother.
Yeah.
But Peter in this episode, he is officially, like, if he hasn't already gone off the deep end.
Really?
Now, I said if he hadn't. Okay. He clearly has.
Yeah.
But now he's like, he lights a ring of fire around his brother.
Around to, a ring of brand fire.
To kill him, but also to, I guess, wipe out what's left of Mother.
Yeah, so he's trying to burn it.
He's the only one that controls
it. Yeah.
Right.
So you think that Peter's going to stop Alan from doing it, but then Peter lights it anyway because he's already got the samples. He doesn't need anything else.
Correct.
And he doesn't want anyone taking it else to, you know, create a cure.
Yeah.
And thinking on this now, too, that we know that Alan developed with Hitachi XVC, was it called, I think?
TXM.
TXM7.
Alan's dead in the future, guys. Just saying it right now, because it would make sense that Hitachi's only person he can talk to is Alan while they're devising this. Alan is actively experimenting, trying to kill himself. Like, for 30 years, Alan is trying to kill himself. That's why he's immortal at the end of the episode. He's using himself as the guinea pig to create a disease that could kill immortals. And then the reason Hitachi went insane is because he's alone on the island, and Alan successfully created a virus that can kill immortals, and it kills himself.
I have two things to that. One, he's too big of a character. He's too big. Part B of one.
Too big
to fail. It's too big to fail. And also, there was the fact that if he wanted to live to survive to make sure it lived out, he could have. If Soren was the answer to the thing, he could have just used Soren to, like, while he, okay, this is working, I'm dying, boom, take Soren's blood.
I guess that's true. Fine.
Three or two, whatever number I'm on, I can't count math. When Julie went to the grave, it wasn't him, and he had left a clue, and she said, oh, it's just like Alan to leave me a clue. So it's just too many stories and strings along that he's not dead. If there is a season three, I will be highly, highly, highly surprised the only reason I can see him not being in season three, if we do get a season three, is that he was busy with another project and that's it.
Oh, we do have a question from the chat. Why was Julia looking for the fetus on the island? Because she thought that was the cure? Is that
She thought that the fetus, that somehow the fetus was the... But what she says also when she goes to Michael is she says there was a child. She doesn't say, I'm looking for the fetus or for a baby. She says, I'm looking for a child. And so we kept it very nebulous as to what is she actually, who is she actually looking for? Is it the jar with the baby in it? Is it Soren that she actually has some inkling that he's out there? So we kept it very nebulous.
Oh, I guess we just latched on to assuming that it was the forever fetus.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, you would think, though, if she says, I'm looking for a child, I mean, although, because she was saying it to him and he'd been locked up for God knows how long, it might be confusing to him if she said, I'm looking for a man who was a child 30 years ago. Like, he might have lost track of time while he was locked up in that thing, so.
We kept it very nebulous on purpose.
Yeah, so
that it could play either way.
Well, either way, if we're 15 years in the future or 30, I think 15 years would be more safe to say if we include Alan, because we just need his voice.
Yeah,
but, I know you hate me.
Yeah.
I mean, he is at the end of this episode. Alan is immortal. To finish up talking about Alan, and so,
do we still know exactly how or who made him become so?
It was Sarah.
Basically, the same way that she became. She gave him the Spinal Tap, and in this case, it worked.
Okay.
Well, she was the baby. She was.
Oh, she's the baby. Okay, that makes sense.
She tapped that.
Yeah, she tapped. She did. In more ways than one.
But yeah, so Alan is, and he becomes what he hates. Like, it's,
I'm sorry, I just thought, like, yeah, now you got to pay me child support forever.
Oh my God.
She's really funny.
Clearly, Sarah can make her own money.
I'm just saying, it was really funny in my head.
She's a world-class maternity expert. But for Alan, it's really the worst case scenario. Like, this thing that he has built up, it's the thing that he hates more than anything on the planet, that he's been working against. He's had a vendetta, and then he becomes exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting place to leave the character because it's devastating. And so we know that, as Lizzie, you were saying, like, he was on a mission to kill himself.
Yeah. Mm. But then again, I think, you know, there's a part of me that believes that Alan, I think at this point, I could see as the only character so far with everything we've been through that I can't see him letting his immortality change him and his views on things.
Well, that's what I just said. He's on a mission to kill himself still.
No, but just in general, though, like, because all of the characters over time, you know, we see Sarah Jordan now. She's working for Laurie. She always swore up and down she never would. And then, you know, Julia. And everybody seemed to have changed once they reached immortality. And I believe that if he, with that being said, in everything that we come to show, obviously he'd be changing. But I also believe, like, the reason he wouldn't have killed himself and just let the thing take over is that he figured somebody has to make sure that this does come to an end. And then I think that he would be like, and then once I know for a fact everything's gone, then I'll bow out.
But see, this is the thing, I think Alan may fall trapped to the same thing that the Immortals did, in that he has this goal in life. Like, I'm going to stop the Immortals and cure the world of them. Much the way that Ilaria is trying to cure the world of humanity. Mm. Once he achieves that goal, he's probably going to see something else that he wants to fix on the planet.
Yeah.
And Alan has such a huge ego on him.
You think he has a big ego?
Oh, yeah. I think he's going to probably wind up saying, like, I'm going to, like, use Sauron's blood, cure myself, and then I'm going to keep saving the world forever because I'm immortal. And he winds up trapped in the same circle that he hated.
The interesting thing about immortality, I think, one of the things that has hit every character who is an immortal or has become immortal is this notion of what do you do with that time and what do you do with that power? Because it really is a power. And does it give you, you then start to feel a responsibility to, I can help the world or I can take over the world. It steers you in one direction or another, but certainly gives you more grandiose plans.
Yeah.
And is that a good thing or is that just a terrible thing to have that, feel that sort of responsibility, like, I have this ability now, and so that somehow makes me able to make those decisions.
Yeah, well, it's sort of what Julia brings up in the end. So, like, let's talk about the future world, the future world, the day 10963. Because Julia wakes up, and now she's with Caleb. And we talked about the sword a little bit, and the RNA sequence.
Stuff. Yeah,
yeah. But then what she says at the very end is, if the plague is immortality, then there's only one cure.
Right.
And she elects to die in that moment.
Are we to assume at this point that the mycotic disease that the Immortals have are not affecting humans?
Yes, correct. In the future.
Okay.
Correct.
So the future, humans are not infected by correct. The disease that's killing the Immortals. Okay.
So it's not mycotic.
I thought this entire season was the disease was with humans and spread to immortals. Mm. And that's why Julia was trying to find the cure, was because it was killing everyone.
Right. Now, we had talked about that, but essentially what we did, once we realized that we wanted to separate the mycosis, dealing with the fertility, from the disease that killed immortals and not have them be part of the same thing, because it was getting too, like, there's one disease and it does all these different things. So we definitely separated them out.
Combobulated.
Yeah.
All right.
We use percolated. I'm going to use combobulated.
So one thing I was definitely wrong on was...
Yes!
Say it.
Oh, I don't know. I just said you were wrong. I got really excited.
You're usually wrong on so many things.
I hate you. Amy is not dead.
Yes!
I thought I saw Amy chopped up last episode. Mm-hmm. I thought it was her. It was not her. It was just somebody else. It was the CDC or the Coast Guard.
It was Coast Guard's Commander Wigger.
Yeah. So Landry's the one who dragged Amy's body away at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, she's horribly disfigured now.
They are now the perfect couple.
And I'm laughing because I was just telling
siblings.
The actress who played Olivia was like, well, you outlived Amy. And I'm like, just picturing, like, did she give me a facial recognition? Like, yeah, I did. No, you didn't. No, she didn't. So that was kind
Amy,
of funny.
Shout out to Sarah Booth.
Yeah, Amy can survive apparently anything.
She's pretty hardy.
Drop her off the bell tower.
Do we have a caller on the line? No? Oh, okay, sorry. We might be expecting a call from somebody else. We're not sure yet. It all depends on his schedule,
that's
okay?
Right. No, you didn't tell us even.
Well, yeah, because I didn't want to get your hopes up.
Is it my birthday surprise?
So Amy is awoken by Mr. Handry. His name comes from... it firstly came from giving a hand job and having his name be Landry, so he named him Handry. But then he really hulked out, so we wanted to combine Hulk and Landry. So we came up with a brand new name for him, which is hashtag Handry. So... Handry is the one who saved Amy. She still hates herself. She still hates him. She's like, why'd you save me? Everything is ruined. I'm ugly now. My eye socket is where my nose should be. I still have nice teeth, though. Glad nobody can take that away from me.
Whoops. Yeah. And can I just say, were you guys surprised? I might be jumping ahead a little bit. I don't want to, but I was going to say I was actually...
Well, let's stick to Amy and Landry. Yeah,
but, So Amy's scheming, as always, just to rush through this. Amy's scheming, as always. Amy wants to set up Sarah and Matt.
And Walker.
Walker. Set up Sarah and Walker to find this baby that is Anne's baby. We'll talk about that scene with Anne in just a second. So they go there, and all the toothless hissing ladies are there. And that's when Sarah's like, that's my baby!
Okay.
And they, like, feel sorry for her, and they let her go. And then Amy shows up later. It's like, oh, what did they do?
They're talking about the jar in the corner.
Yeah. Amy shows up later to find out what they did to him. What did they do to him?
They laid a trap so that they could kill you.
Yeah.
Because you've had them locked up in a basement for years upon end.
I'm just making babies. Them, like, shower. I don't know.
But I like Landry's sort of, like, plot line in this episode a little bit. Like, he sort of like finally realizes that he's being used.
He finds something that'll love him.
He becomes like an Igor / Frankenstein / like Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm.
Of course,
he's my friend.
Beautiful.
You have no friend.
He looks his makeup effects on one side of his face. He looks like those small short tank dudes from Doctor Who. Like those guys who only do war. Like he looks like one of those guys.
Oh, the Centaurans?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that because I don't watch enough Doctor Who. But, so he runs off with a baby because he's like, I got my little friend. I'm going to raise this guy. So that's storyline number one for season three. That is the most important story.
He went back into the Burning Abbey at the end. So
yeah, he gave the baby back to his mom.
Gave it to his mom and said,
like, bye-bye, mama. He gave the baby back to Anne. That's why Anne had...
Oh, going home.
Right.
Oh, I didn't see where he ran into. He ran into the building.
It was, like, right outside of the building when it was burning. She's like, no, come back, Landry. And he's like, no. And he runs back.
Yeah, I must go home. Where are you going?
Home.
So my one prediction was kind of right, that one of the characters turns into a baby machine where they pull her teeth out and they put her in one of those things. I don't know if they put her in one of those things, but I'm assuming...
Well, no, because everything was fire and they all died.
No, they all died.
Yeah, but I mean...
That's the plan anyway.
Hey.
But they were going to...
They pull her teeth out.
She pulled their teeth out. This was a little
vengeance.
Yeah.
A little vengeance.
I wouldn't say that they could really get back into society after what they've been through. So
no, I'd say, well, maybe many, 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 many years of therapy. Some, like, what do they call
many
those?
Years.
Veneers, you know? Some.
I don't think they want to have kids anymore,
right?
Though.
No.
Okay, and the scene with Anne and Amy.
Yeah.
That was... I love Severn Thompson so much. She is phenomenal.
She is.
And I also love... Amy, why is the name escaping me right now? She's going to kill me because she...
Allison?
Yeah, Allison Louder, yeah. Sorry, Allison, don't kill me.
They should do it.
They have such great chemistry on camera. Yeah. I'm really sad that we're never going to see that again.
Well, unless they find another show together, but...
Yeah. Or they're just in a memory fighting with one another, like, for somebody else.
But that was a very powerful scene because you think that Anne is actually manipulating her, but at the same time, it's all true.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she really just is stepping into the exact same thing with Eli again.
Right. Yeah.
But the way she says it is completely true. Yeah, she did create Eli.
Yeah.
She wrote the book on
it. I want to do a spin-off show. I want to do a spin-off show with just Eli and going off. Yeah.
Can we do a spin-off show with Neil Napier and Steven Weber, and they're just like back-to-back doing like a game show?
Yeah.
Twinsies.
The three of them on a road trip together would be a fun...
They're fighting for the love of Jerry Ryan.
And Anne's the, like, quiet girl that nobody respects, but they learn to love throughout the road trip.
We get Olmec back from the Great Temple, and then we can have the Oubliette make an appearance.
Yes!
How did Olmec get
in? Doesn't matter.
By the end, Anne and Peter have made it. They're among the group that gets rescued by the Marines.
Who was taking Peter away, though?
Did
he see?
No, it was...
That was the police.
I want to say Department of Defense, but that's not it.
It was the people
the people who hired Kyle to...
But they hired him to investigate Alan, not Peter. So they're taking Peter anyway?
Well, what happened is Kyle has twisted the evidence and told a little bit of a lie to get Peter arrested and not Alan.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's basically...
I must have missed that.
Kyle's figured out at this point, this is what happened. I know who the good quote unquote good guys are, right. and or at least who the bad guys are.
It's like getting Aquaman for tax evasion. It was like, oh, you want to know who blew up the LRA building in Paris? It was Dr. Farragut. The other one.
But then the Dr. Double Mycot Dick Texas gives up the safety deposit box as well, and the woman has a really sketchy looking face on when she's leaving, so I'm assuming she's a bad guy. So
Not necessarily. What he did is he took the evidence that he got from Alan that's in that safety deposit box,
so that was
and he's using it against Peter instead.
Okay, so he wasn't... Okay,
the evidence of how he blew how Alan blew up Ilaria is in there.
Is in that safety deposit box.
So all he has to say is no, that was Peter.
Yeah, I got that from Peter, not from Alan.
And they're going to trust him on it.
Right.
Sorry, I don't know how I missed that.
It's a little subtle in there. Yeah, and there's a lot happening.
That day 14 scene goes real quick. There's a whole bunch of storylines flying at you.
Okay. Yeah.
But we did have Dr. Summers. He has a nice little, almost like a dad moment in this episode. Because he's very protective of Soren.
Call of Duty 4. Yep.
Which, that kid should not be playing Call of Duty 4. No, he's just gone through a massive traumatic experience.
Yeah. You put him probably on, Spyro for, the original PlayStation.
No, you're going to give that kid a PlayStation 4 and The Last of Us.
I don't have that. So he can relive.
He would kill him.
He's immune. He's literally the girl from Last of Us.
Just give him Pac-Man and Frogger for a little while.
Look, you start him on Pac-Man. Sooner or later, he's drinking Bud Light. That's all I'm saying. The commercial they did with Pac-Man.
Free advertising.
Okay. So moving on.
There was a great moment where Peter catches up to him. It's because Soren just ran away because he got mad and stabbed Peter in the leg. It's like, I hate you.
You killed my
stab.
Mom.
Yeah.
But I'm laughing at how Peter took it looking at Kyle and just being like, you should watch it. It was almost like a person complaining on the streets, hey, your kid just slammed into me and knocked my bag out of my hand. You should really watch what they're doing. That was the level of him complaining.
Did you stab him?
This was another element talking about how it's trying to look at everything Peter's done that's super evil to gain respect, but in the end he's still just a bitch that gets slugged in the face. He falls that was kind of he just gets knocked out by Dr. Double Mycot Dick Texas.
Because he's even both Neil and just the character himself were just completely ripped and I can climb the Obliette and da da da, and it's little kid step.
No, well, it's funny because... Okay, it's no secret that Neil Napier is not the tallest of actors. In most scenes, you play that with... He looks very tall. He looks strong and powerful because the dude's jacked. The dude is ripped. But in the scenes where you need it to play to your advantage, you make him look like he's just getting knocked out of the way like it's nothing.
Well, even jack guys can get knocked out, The only scene where you can actually tell
is when he's next to Alan, but that's because he's 6 foot something.
Yeah, Alan's really... I'm really tall.
That's a really cool point from Heather Sivo in the chat role, that the safety deposit box was number 274, which was the title of an episode in season one. And now I'm
little callback.
Now my head hurts.
Was that just a little in-joke?
So does Antonin for FedEx.
Little callback.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's not a direct meaning to read into there.
Everyone wants to know, was the date on the katana August 15th?
There was a date on the katana that was August 15th. That's actually some really good... Someone did their translation.
Wow.
It ties into some storyline that we had in the show, and then we ended up pulling back on.
Oh, really?
But it is definitely a date that is part of our storyline.
Can we just say it's the release of the sterilization priors?
Ooh, I like.
There, that's nice. What everyone's saying.
The release of the what?
The sterilization fruit food. So, was the whole point of kind of Ilaria Fresh, hi guys, we're solving world hunger, we're going to basically give food to everyone and at the same simultaneously sterilize the entire globe, or is this just happening in certain countries?
No, it's the whole globe, what we wanted to do at the beginning of the season, we talked about taking a multinational corporation, a food-producing conglomerate, and having them... It's like, look, we're doing good stuff, we're making good food, we're making food safer, and the apples don't turn brown, and what is the really insidious part of that? How evil could we make that?
Also, as a curious
curious point because I was thinking to myself, I wonder why the Immortals at Ilaria wouldn't show themselves. And I think, well, there could be like a really big backlash, like, oh my God, like forever people, like, no, kill them, kill them. Hmm. But then at the same time, how society hasn't put two and two together by like, wait, everybody, all the dudes are becoming infertile. Why is this? Oh, it happened as soon as this company came up with this fruit. So why there wouldn't be a backlash against that somehow is also confusing
well,
to me.
Ilaria,
it's something they can kind of get into in season three too. That would be really
Ilaria fun. Ilaria is a big multi, like you're saying, it's a multinational conglomerate. They have like their fingers everywhere in politics of every country, in different companies. I think it'd probably be pretty easy for them. They probably put it into place where anybody that starts to put those pieces together gets crushed by them. Like the story gets crushed, yeah, or they will get literally crushed under a trash compactor or something.
Larry's got their fingers everywhere.
Just put in chains and locked away for the rest of your life, you know, that kind of stuff.
It's basically, the whole show is just a warning about Monsanto.
Pretty much.
Is what, is what we're getting. Monsanto is run by Immortals.
We definitely wanted to play that. And not necessarily to vilify the whole process, but just to say, okay, here's a potential dark road that you could be going down.
Yeah, with like GMOs and everything being so prominent in the news.
Right.
So can I ask you a question real quick? And you feel free to answer if you want, Steve. I know you probably can't. Where do you guys see this event happening? Or should I say, when do you see this event happening that causes everyone to be immortal? 500 immortals. When do you see this event and where?
I don't want to answer that exactly because we may play it if we get season three. We actually wrote a storyline that was the immortality backstory and how they became immortal. And it tied back to the island, and we had this whole thing. And then we said, you know what? This is too soon.
Was it like a fountain of youth or something?
Not a literal fountain of youth, but we did talk about an event and a thing that happened going way back. It's clearly, we also did the flashback with Michael going back to the 1500s. I think it was 1500s.
Yeah.
And so it had to predate that. But yes, there was an event that happened, and that's where the 500 immortals came from.
Yeah. Okay. So, and to tracing on that, too, whatever this event is, again, without giving too much away, there are obviously so many people, both different ages, different nationalities and ethnicities. Mm-hmm. Is this an event where it was a collective, it happened at one spot, or it happened collectively throughout the world?
In our minds, it was something that happened in one spot, and we had a great explanation for it all.
Cool.
And we didn't get
like,
shown
I want to know
season,
what Hitake was doing, chilling at 1500 with this guy.
Yeah. I'm like, for some reason, I'm kind of thinking like time travel, and I know that's like so out there. But when you look at a position, you have white people, you have black people, you have Arabs, you have every race and nationality represented within these 500. It would need to be a microcosm of certain people. 500's a lot, so maybe even a colony like what was on St. Germain's Island. Because if you look at St. Germain as this place where crazy stuff's happening, it could become the last safe haven on Earth.
Yeah. Well, again,
they're trying to guide the humans towards something. Mm.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's the technology that they don't have the ability to create at this point in time.
Right.
But if they had it later, and then they went back in time, and there's only 500 of them left because they know where overpopulation can go, they're trying to guide the human race and
aliens.
If they control the
we have talked about all these various options. I can tell you right now, it's not time travel.
Good.
Okay.
I'm glad I'm wrong.
My crazy thought would be to tie it somehow to there's this theory amongst people who are like deep into the psychic community that there are certain places across the globe that are just psychic hotspots, just that one spot, like
aliens and ghosts,
or not even just aliens, but like it has like a deep, like New Orleans is supposed to be one of those spots, or like it's somewhere in the South at least, and just psychic abilities are stronger there. I wonder if there's something where like that's why you get people from different races, religions, and creeds all coming together. If those psychic things bring them together either via teleportation.
Well, that's what's interesting, too, because did we ever specify exactly how many years ago they became?
No.
They didn't. So that's the thing I'm saying is it had to be at least, I think one of them mentioned he was a Viking, so I'm assuming it could be thousands of years ago. But again, where in a place was there a Japanese guy, the woman on Ilaria who made the chicken, she was like Indian descent. You know, you have the white guy, you have this guy. I mean, there's just, and children. So that's what I'm like, oh, now I need to know. Give me your phone.
The only other kind of explanation I can think of is going back to one of the theories I had in the first season was, you know, the Greek god theory. But if you tie that in among all other historical figures. Like, if
and
you
what
look
they're
at,
saying is it happened collectively in one spot.
I know. I'm saying if you tie that in with, let's say there was a complete civilization that was overpopulating the Earth, but everyone was an immortal. Let's look at an entire world full of immortals. They drive it towards, through technology or through whatever means, that everyone becomes immortal. And then a disease decides that it's going to wipe them out. And a colony of people, like the colony on St. Germain's, because of some mutation, because of what they were eating, like the apples, survives the disease that turns everyone, that turns people into humans or kills them. So then the rest of the world is breeding as humans. They're the only immortals. And then they go back to their families. They go back to their prospective countries.
And
like,
they have to watch people die. And
well, then they realize what's happened. And all the technology that they have or anything they do is mistaken as magic. It's mistaken as a god. It goes back to all these cultures throughout the centuries.
Like Michael, yeah.
And exactly. So Michael's like a microcosm of that. Yeah. And then they're just basically, one person cannot start a technological revolution. If you come out of the gate with technology that's too powerful for your time, people either steal it from you, kill you, or you're never heard from again.
Yeah.
So if you look at those people, that's why Ilaria was formed, for the survivors of those 500 to be able to thrive and guide humanity towards where it was again without making the same mistakes that they made as their civilization.
Beautiful point.
Close.
I'm just going to say I'm going to totally...
Close. Interesting.
I like that. I like that theory. I've always loved the fact that they would be considered they would be the basis for the Greek gods and the Egyptian gods and the Chinese, like all the different gods of different kinds. It could even be like the ancestors that the Chinese and Japanese culture talk about.
Well, it could even be the pharaoh.
Just, there.
Like, why would you have a tomb that's so gigantic if you're a pharaoh? Well, maybe because you're still alive down there.
Like, maybe the first episode of Futurama where Bender has like a casino.
Yeah, it's like, great. Well, maybe it's because, like, you know, me and the other pharaohs who are also silverized because we're late and stuff. Like, maybe we just want to chill for the next century or two, figure out how do we get ourselves out of this pickle.
We need some time away from people.
Can I just say, as a guys, I'm going to miss you, and mostly Stephen, just that entire theory, you're a very smart, intelligent person, but I love how you always say 100.
100. 100. They say they never gave a date, but the immortals were made around 500 years ago. I don't think that's true. I think there was never really a date.
They never specified.
We did. I think we did actually talk about, I think Gunnar says in season one, says something about 500 years. I'm trying to remember.
He definitely says he was a Viking.
Yep.
Yeah, that wouldn't be 500 years ago.
No, that would be longer ago. So I'm trying to remember if we had actually made it in dialogue if it was cut.
I feel like it was 500 years from something, but I don't think that was the date of the event.
I don't know. No, I'm thinking about 500 immortals.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
There was some. I think he said there was something 500 years ago.
Hitachi was 513 in season one years old.
Ah, that was it. Hitachi's age.
So. Who knows? We'll see.
Either way. Yeah, but there's so many questions.
We still don't know if immortals can get together and have immortal children. We don't know, like, what the deal is with that. So there's so many questions. Guys, we're out of time.
Yeah. Sadly, that's going to do it for this season of Helix here at AfterBuzz TV.
Helix.
Everybody, hashtag please.
Steve, anything you want to say to the fans, to the audience?
Just thank you so much for watching. It's been a real kick, and I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah.
Great. Do you have anything else you're working on in the meantime, or just waiting to hear?
Just waiting to hear right now, and we'll see. We'll see. If not, on to the next.
If Helix does not get picked up, are you going to try to get involved in the new X-Files?
Oh, I would love it. All I know about the new X-Files is what I've heard. I haven't gotten a call or anything like that, so I would love
hint,
it.
Hint, hint.
Yeah. What have you heard?
I know, just that it's there, that it exists. So I'll be watching just like everybody else.
Well, where can the people keep up with you in the meantime?
At Steve Maietta on Twitter.
So check place. There for Helix
Stuff.
Season 3 rumors and potential news. But that's thank you so much for joining us this
thank
season.
You.
Once again,
thank you.
Helix Season 2. Liz, where can people keep up with you?
You guys, I don't know. I'll be floating about here and there if I pick up a project, but you can always reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram at Lizzie Maui. That's LizzyMawy.
Stephen Lemieux.
You guys can find me on Twitter at Stephen Lemieux, STPHNLEMIEUX. And I do want to just take a second. Thank you again, Steve Maietta, for coming in. Thanks to all our special guests we have this season. Shout out to Sarah Booth, Tiffany Greshler, Severin Thompson, Allison Lauder, Mark Anime, Neil Napier. Tons more. I can't even name them all right now because I'm so bad. But shout out to everyone from season one, too. Thank you for being a part of the Helix After Show.
Yeah,
on
thank
After
you
Buzz
guys
TV.
So much for joining us. Guys, I'm Zach Wilson. You can follow me on Twitter at ThatZachWilson, THATZACHL. ZACHWILSON. I'm screwing up my
name.
That's
the first time you've messed it up.
I know, right? But you can also follow, you can also catch me here on AfterBuzz. I'm doing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show on Tuesday nights. And starting Wednesday, we're going to be talking about Daredevil. Two episodes a week. Be sure to join us. Guys, and Grimm. There's a lot of shows. Guys, I'm Zach Wilson. Thanks for geeking out with us.
Bye.
All right.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.